I'm very well, thank you.
Did you get your money?
I did.
Sweet.
Cash.
The system works.
Okay, awesome. Thank you all for being on time. So sweet for calling this meeting to order. We have 10 people, so that's okay. Are there any modifications to the agenda? No. Okay, awesome. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll move to approve the agenda as submitted.
Thank you. Okay, all those opposed? Awesome. And then any modifications to the minutes?
What am I looking at?
I move we approve minutes as written.
I'm sorry.
Okay, all those opposed to approving minutes? All those in favor? All those abstaining? Okay, Jen and Craig, absent last time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
Okay, so then let's jump right into it. Michaela's asked to go first. So, Michaela, from Assemblymember Todd Gloria's office, you have the floor.
Thank you, Andrea. Hi, everybody. My name is Michaela. I'm from Assemblymember Todd Gloria's office. It's been a while. Randy, my colleague, was covering for our office while I was doing scheduling with my colleague was on maternity leave, so I'm very happy to be back in the District 2 communities. I was talking to some OB residents, and they kind of made a joke that, you know, during these meetings, residents or board members might be a little timid to ask me questions, or I don't get as much heat as Tim does. But, you know, there's one thing to remember with the California State Assembly, it's the other house in addition to State Senator Tony Atkins. So you have the governor, you have the assembly, and then you have the Senate. So just a quick civics 101. Right now, we are about to close our legislative ideas period. So next month, we'll begin introducing new bill ideas for the next legislative session. The best bill ideas come from constituents. So if you have anything in mind, there should be a law. That's a dumb law. It should be repealed. You know, please contact us. Another thing is last year, you know, we were very successful in getting specific budget items to San Diego. And within the next month, that's what our office is focusing on as well. OB Main Street mentioned one budget ask could be retrofitting for the OB Cure. So hopefully we can connect with it. If it's any kind of like big dollar item, feel free to let me know. Other than that, two dates this year to remember. April 1st is when the census starts. The first point of the census is online, and then you'll start to be contacted via phone. Another date to remember is October 1st, when the Real ID will start to be implemented. Does everybody know what the Real ID is? So basically, on your driver's license, if you would like to use your driver's license in order to enter a federal building or to go on a plane, you'll need your Real ID if you don't want to use your passport. And because of that, DMV wait times in order to get an appointment are about 3 months out. So we recommend to avoid the DMV at all possible unless you need to get the Real ID.
That's not understanding.
And our office has been very helpful with constituents. I had a constituent who needed a behind the wheel test, and he wasn't able to make an appointment online. And we were able to assist him in getting an appointment. So another point for our office is if you need assistance with any state agency, EDD, DMV, please contact us. And that's just kind of my new year report. Thank you for your time. I won't be able to stay tonight, but I'm going to connect with Miller on everything that was discussed.
And I'll send you a budget memo we sent to the
Tony Atkins. Tony Atkins.
She's from the Tugboat.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for coming. Welcome back. Okay, Miller, you're. No, Teddy, sorry.
Hi, I'm Teddy. I'm a member of the Campbell's office. Happy New Year to the board. The first meeting, kind of it up. We're super excited about our State of the District event that happened last month. We were honoring local community members throughout District 2. And for Ocean Beach, we honored Ocean Beach Hardware as the small business of the year. So they were super happy about that. And we're honored to give them recognition for all the local community. Neighbor of the Year for Ocean Beach was Principal Marco Drapo. So we're happy to have him and all the work that he and the crew are doing in a lot for pedestrian safety around campuses. It's going to be a big issue. We did have our budget memo submitted, and I wanted to thank you guys for submitting your priorities. That helped form a lot of what was in the budget. We put everything in there, and we'll be working through the budget process through June to figure out what we can actually get done. It's a lot on the list, but we're going to be advocating with you guys on those major priorities. Another thing we wanted to let you know, two events, was the Java with Jen coming up this weekend on Saturday. It's close by, so I wanted to let you know it's actually in Point Loma, but since you guys are close enough, it's at Kakawa Coffee on Voltaire Street. So if you guys want to have a one-on-one with Council Member Campbell, please join us there. And then on the 22nd of February, for Love Your Pet Day, Council Member Campbell is sponsoring adoptions of pets at the Humane Society. So if any of you are looking for a pet in your life or want to adopt a pet, come to the Humane Society and adopt a pet. No cost. Council Member Campbell will be sponsoring that. So other than that, that's it. Yeah. Thank you.
Tracy?
Yeah. We were kind of wondering, so we didn't notice in the budget letter that the Bacon Street Bike Boulevard idea hasn't been presented. We were wondering what the timeline is on that.
I can get back to that.
Okay, yeah, because that's something that we're continually...
Was it in your budget letter?
So the repaving of Bacon has been on the priority list for, South Mare wanting to repave all the streets. Mm-hmm. We've been submitting things we want on to see to help increase bike traffic, because everyone's supposed to go down Bacon and not down Sunset Cliffs. And we have still gotten no timeline on when the repaving is going to happen, so we also don't know how on top of our requests we need to go.
There's been a letter almost.
It wasn't like the Bacon Street
Bike Boulevard
has been funded for a while.
It's
part of the repaving all the
streets. Yeah, I don't have
streets.
The
yeah.
Off the top of my head, but I can.
Yeah, it would be great if you could get back to us. And then also, I believe there's a CIP on order for the four corners of West Point Loma and Bacon to install ramps and clean up that area and put sidewalks in. So I'd like to know what the status is on that as well.
Okay, I can follow up with you.
Okay, thanks.
One more thing. Is there an update on vacation rental regulation through Jen's office or otherwise?
There's nothing official on docket or anything, but we've been working really closely with a lot of the key players in that discussion, and the council member is pretty enthusiastic about getting something done on that. It is a pretty dynamic and complex issue, especially looking at a lot through the budget lens. She's now on the budget committee. But nothing as of yet.
No timeline, no proposed timeline, because obviously it's been idle for a year and a half, and mm-hmm. Scott Sherman was on record recently, criticizing the fact that nothing has happened for a year and a half, and I understand, there was reason for that and not being able to present something that had been significantly different from the previous proposal, but I'm just wondering where we are, because I don't see anything in the
I haven't been working on that, but... So April is when he releases his budget, and then the council will be able to review it. And
that one will
have
to start going
to
council meeting. Yay!
Wait,
thank you so much for
having me.
Thank you.
Miller?
Hi, folks. Miller Salton with Senator Atkins' office. Hope everyone's doing well. First off, legislature is back, as Mikhail was talking about. Budget process is underway. The governor released his budget. And now it goes to the Senate Budget Committee for review. So it's going through the process. Last year there were record funds going to education and a reserve for future potential economic downturns. And there are a lot of informal projects funded, as Michaela said. A big focus for the pro tem is looking at affordable housing and how to make it work so as many people are happy as possible while also kind of trying to attack the issue at hand with our housing crisis. As probably a lot of you know, SB 50, the big housing bill, is dead. But the protest has said that something will be introduced this year that will be around housing and creating affordable housing. So it's something to keep an ear out for. And feel free to reach out to me if you want the POSEM to know your thoughts on the idea, because we're kind of all down to ground one, scratching SB 50 and looking at it in a brand new way. And the POSEM is trying to talk to all four members in the Senate and see what the next steps are. The Senate will also be voting on a $5.5 billion bond for climate resiliency. So this will address sea level rise, help prepare for droughts and wildfires, safe drinking water, flood protection. Most of those are big issues here in OB. I know, if I also live here. So that is really exciting. We're talking about different projects that could be funded with that bond. Andrea and I were talking about those, so another thing to look out for, if it passes the legislature and then signed by the governor, it goes to the ballot in November. So I'll keep you updated on that. And then she's also working on a comprehensive wildfire plan for California. I think we covered everything else. So happy to take questions, comments. Yeah.
Anything going on with respect to amending or tweaking AB 5?
There's a lot. a lot. Mm-hmm. The final date to introduce bills is until February 20-something. So we don't know a cumulative list yet. But I can come back next month and speak more to that. There's a lot.
Not land use, but for a matter of personal interest, is anything going on with respect to the musicians?
I think I just heard that someone was working on that. So yes, it's definitely something in the works. Yeah.
There's two main organizations that are lobbying on behalf of Californians for the Arts, the California Arts Council. They're both working on this. Right now the definition is fine artist as an exemption, but it actually isn't defined in the bill itself. So there's healthy conversation all up and down the coast right now about this. A couple focus groups that were, you know, originated in Los Angeles like 2 weeks ago with a lot of input happening there.
So I know it's a big concern for just about anybody who plays music or anyone who has venues where music is played.
Any independent artist is hitting
right
hard right now.
Theater groups.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of calls on it, and it's something the Pro Tem is personally aware of and is working on.
Yeah.
Questions, thoughts, feelings, meditation? Cool. All right, thank you.
Thank you. All the time. Moving on. Non-agenda public comment. I have one person signed up there, David. I'll give you 2 minutes on the floor. Good evening. I'm just happy to introduce myself. I'm Sarah David. I'm running for State Assembly in the 78th District, which is right here. Runs up and down the coast all the way from Solana Beach to IB, and then goes in downtown, uptown, all the way up to Kensington and Talmadge. And so I'm running for an open seat. Todd Gloria is vacating the seat and has other big plans. So I am a licensed midwife. I have worked in healthcare and women's health policy for the last 15 years. And in doing that, I have delivered babies all over San Diego County. I own a small business, the Chinchula Vista. I own the birth center where folks could come get all their prenatal care, contraceptive care, cancer screening, all that stuff there, and have their babies. And from that, I have moved on more onto the policy side in maternal child health, because so much of what I see with my families is not really helping people with morning sickness. It's helping people who are like, you can't find a place to live on the wages that we make in this town unless you're living with, you know, two families together. So I really changed my focus from direct patient care to working on policy issues. Again, still with the focus of young families and making sure our babies have a future.
And then, of course, on the future point, I also have a major interest in us doing something very real and substantial on climate. I have a 7-year-old daughter, and it's really hard to imagine what her future is going to be like if we don't do really big things really quickly. And I'm not taking any fossil fuel contributions or any corporate contributions at all, so I can have a really open and independent perspective when I do get up to Sacramento, which is not the case for everyone running in Missouri. So I live and work in Hillcrest. I'm a third generation in a small business there as well. And so I want to bring all that healthcare and business perspective up, and I would love to meet any and all of you. My website is votesarahdavis.com, Sarah with an H. And thank you so much for your accommodation this evening.
Yeah, of course. So timely. We all should receive our vote by mail ballot.
Yes.
Yes. Woo!
Did your commercials drop this week, too?
Anthony. No, sorry for that. Is there any more non-agenda public comments? Okay, great. Moving into the first action item, the Bermuda stairs.
Yay.
To introduce this project. We are very excited for this project moving forward with design for the construction. And we have a great respect for this community. We are excited to move forward. And on our back, we are here to introduce this project. And hopefully by the end of this project presentation, we acquire the board's approval for moving forward for this action item. Tonight we have our great consultant team of expert designers with us on board, Rick Engineering and Moffat Nicole. We have them here to go over the design aspects and technicality of this project and introduce the rest of unknown for you all. Thank you for everyone.
Part of the city.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Lisa. My name is Christina Zamora. I am a social engineer and I work with Moffat Nicole. So we were tasked with doing the structural design of the new stairway. This is kind of just a map of where the existing stairs are located. You can kind of see in the red dot on the screen. It's on the western terminus end of Bermuda Avenue. That's where the stairs are located. And it provides the public access from the top of the bluff down to the beach location. Here's a photo of what the existing stairway looks like. As you can see, it has deteriorated over the years due to the service life of the extreme conditions within the harsh environment being on the coastline. Kind of hard to see, but a lot of concrete cracking and falling, and particularly the bottom flight of stairs, you can see that the concrete steps have completely broken off. The concrete is only connected to the bottom landing. Broken landing by just the reinforcing bars, which are typically embedded in the concrete itself. And so now it's completely exposed, and you can really see it's rusted through by the discoloration, which is a little hard to see with the lights on, but.
Oh, we know it looks.
If you've been there, you probably know, yeah. It's definitely closed off right now. It's fenced off on the top, so it's definitely not safe to use right now. So our design concept, there is a rendering of what we're looking at to replacing those existing stairs. Based off of the project site constraints, we're going to be following a very similar alignment and geometry to the existing stairway. We're looking at about 3 flights of concrete stairs. So you have the top landing, and then there's going to be an intermediate landing. With the bottom flight of stairs, it's going to be designed as a large concrete block, pretty much. The stairways are designed to be code compliant, so we're looking at utilizing concrete steps as well as a concrete wall, which will be provided to anchor the stainless steel handrails. We designed it as a durable design as well as to be resilient to any coastal environmental impacts such as sea level rise, storm surges, wave, and tidal action. Here is another, would be better if the lights turned down a little bit more, but here is another rendering of the new stairway system where you can kind of see ghosted in there the foundations that we're proposing. It's going to be a self-supporting structure. So at the top and middle landings, we are designing it to be supported on concrete piles, and then that bottom concrete block will be supported on a spread footing. So the intent is, because the beach profile obviously fluctuates throughout the season, we are actually going to design the stairs to go all the way down to bedrock to ensure that we don't have any erosion control, any erosion issues whatsoever. And then the piles and the spread footing foundation itself will be embedded into the bedrock by a few feet to ensure that we have competent bearing of the structure. Here is our estimated project budget and schedule, and we're anticipating the construction to start sometime in the summer of 2021 with about a 6-month duration.
6 months, that's good.
That's a general idea of the project. Any questions?
I do, if you have a lot of questions. So I'm looking at the wall, having lived there for 60 years. I know that those waves hit that. One of the reasons why we had steps, stairs, you know, that allowed the water to come through, and obviously, I mean, they got old. But I'm worried about that wall getting hit as much with waves. I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to be able to be hammered quite like our waves do.
Well, our design does include a detailed look at study for 100-year storm events, and the actual wall thickness itself is obviously what's on the design basis, so we're going to account for all that weight action that does hit it. There's a lot of things doing the design aspect of it to ensure that we have the concrete performance and durability that we need to withstand it.
Okay, and then the safety of the steps as you're coming down, because you know the water's going to be on there, the sand's going to be on there. So what, you know, is it allowing for the water to come through? A drainage type of thing?
So the wave action, yeah, but then the water will be throughout the steps anyway, the alternate zones. So concrete's pretty durable in regards to that.
I'm just wondering about the slippage, so to speak.
Slippage. Well, the steps themselves will probably have really nice steps in there, so that way you won't have any slippage.
Are you familiar with the Pescadero stairs, which were put in 10 years ago? The stainless steel has already been ripped off twice. The concrete wall has collapsed already, and it's so slippery with algae, it's nearly unusable in the winter. And that design looks almost exactly like it. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if you guys are trying to take a one design and stick it in the different things, but in that area there, really, there's so much energy that comes in at both of those points, especially where your wall was, which she was talking about. The waves ricochet off that cliff and it'll slam right into it. You can end up with a collapsed concrete wall in 10 years again.
Right, and this is an early rendering stage of our design, and we are looking to, there's a lot of aspects within just a concrete design. You can look at concrete mixes to make sure you have a more sustainable, you know, design to account for all that. We're going to add in the reinforcing either to make it a lot stronger system. And then
one of the reasons that our firm was retained is because we are a waterfront structure specialist. That's what we do. We design stuff made, we design stuff for the boards. The concrete that we use in the Pescadero stairs was the same concrete that you use on the stairs in your backyard. So we have, there's admixtures, there's air entrainment, we take special care in the curing. We understand that the marine environment is one of the most corrosive there is to structures anywhere on Earth. So we are taking it into consideration. We're doing a sea level rise study we're anticipating the violent forces that do occur, and not only that, but the resiliency. So long-term durability, you know, we look at the fluoride intrusion, because really the strength of the concrete is the steel inside. So we protect the steel by some of the admixtures that we were talking about before. We absolutely understand that you guys are frustrated by the failure of the pressure air series, and we're working very hard to make sure that doesn't happen. We're quite confident we're going to give you an excellent product.
Did you guys build the test barrel stairs too?
No.
Do you have
near
an ocean that you can go and look at and see what the end product might look like?
Sure. Yeah, Moth Maple. So there's a bunch up near Scripps. Some of the houses on the top floor stairs that were built in the 70s or so.
They came all the way down to the ocean where the ocean could touch it?
Yeah.
On Moth.
Yeah.
What about
algae
buildup?
So that is a concern that there's not really a solution for that unless it's a maintenance. You can't really design algae away, right? It's going to exist. On the surface of the stairs, you generally still have algae. If you think that the not having the wall there will allow it to wash away, it's like...
Not so much wash away, but just need more air.
Yeah, we can investigate that. But
yeah, there are some complications that I want to have an open rail system. It's not as great resistant to abrasion from a lot of the debris that comes up from the water, so you're going to be talking about a lot more maintenance concern issues with the open rail.
Right, and whenever you have the railing that goes into the concrete, that is an area where you have a corrosion issue, right? Because those waves are still hitting those rails move back and forth and create a little space. In that space, the chlorides get in, and then you're replacing those rails. So it's a balance.
You give us a sort of start date. Is there a sort of end date?
So we're anticipating starting construction summer 21, and we're anticipating a 6-month duration of construction.
Comes to sort
of. So
it takes 6 months in total to build?
That's what we're anticipating right now, yes.
How come when I spoke to somebody, we formed a little committee, and I did some inquiries, and I was told there was no way that it will be done before 3 years.
I can't speak on what you guys were talking about at your committee meetings, but I can tell
somebody from the city that I spoke to.
Oh.
Called officials. I was the one to call officials, and they told me that nothing would happen.
Set expectations low.
Yeah.
One of the councilmen's office.
Jen Campbell's or Lori Zach?
I don't want to say that. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So if the person isn't aware of what state it's in, there's a lot of permitting that goes on behind the scenes that's already happened.
Right.
For
and
us
they
to
did
get to
speak
the point.
Of permit that needed to come, and thus the 3 years.
Right.
It just seems like we've been told so many dates,
okay,
so many times,
yeah.
And it hasn't happened. And if you are the people that have anything to do with it, I want you to hear my voice. And hear the voices of the people that live nearby and love Bermuda Beach and want to see it open to our children, our grandchildren, our family, our friends. This putting it off and shutting it off is very, very annoying.
I hear you, and I know that this has been closed for some time, I think for as long as I've been working for the city myself. But I assure you that this is the date that we are marching toward. We are in design right now. I think that previous times when you might have heard a timeline, this project was still in the planning phase and looking at
getting more permits to get before.
Well,
you
we still
do
are.
That.
We are in the permit process.
So this is quite a determining process. So
this is
coming here and present to us so that we can either approve or deny this, which will be one step in getting the CDP.
Yeah.
What can you tell me so I believe you more than I believe anybody else that
says you do? I can tell you the city doesn't pay us until they're close. So normally we don't get the call until they're really close.
Then I'll ask you. We had a contract and with the city, and the city came back, we changed the date when it was close.
If we get to 100% design, because they don't
never come back with a delay because of the permit?
Not when you get to 100% design. We're at 60% right now, so we're close.
The permitting process is something that is long and involved, and there are a lot of agencies involved. Given the location, right, we're right there in the ocean. There are a lot of agencies that are concerned that want to take a look and do their due diligence. It takes time. When we started our design, we had a 2-year clock till we started construction.
That's where we were. So we're marching through that now. We've submitted to start the coastal development process. Right, we're going through the permitting. Once we have the permitting, we're ready to award construction. As long as the funding has been set aside and available for the project, we can go with it. I can tell you, I think in the past we've heard things that was in the planning phase, but I assure you,
I've heard things where they were passing the buck from one person to another. And I'm a fairly intelligent person. When I talk to enough people and I hear fingers and voices and aims being pushed aside to somebody else, I know I've lost.
Right.
There's nothing Mark can say. Everybody's got who they're going to point their finger at, all set up in a line, and there's nothing to penetrate that. I just hope it gets penetrated this time.
I can
not
tell you,
a story
as a senior project manager on this, that date is my date to meet, my deadline to meet to go to construction, right? So
that's
nice. I can tell you that's my
deadline.
And
there's no chance of money being diverted.
Well, you know.
The company was earmarked and then shipped with La Jolla last year for a project. So we don't like the second tier to La Jolla.
We're
going to
build a wall.
I understand that, you know, this has been sometimes coming with some funding challenges, but my understanding is that I'm moving forward, understanding that we have funding right now to go through design. We'll receive funding when we need to go to construction.
We know what you look like now.
Awesome.
So I guess the question on that, following up on this guy, is there anything that this community members can do to prevent the problems that these people are speaking of, or is it just we get a different elected official and something changes? But is there anything that we can impact? Or if there's not, then we trust you.
You can come to the budget meetings in June and July and make sure that you speak in front of council.
Okay.
Or email Teddy, who was here earlier, and I can get you his email, and just make sure that you want it. You just say, so it's fully funded through the design phase.
Correct.
They're designing it. So then it would be coming down to the construction budget. So that would be one of the big asks. Our council member has included it in her budget memo as of now. But yeah, we'll need to turn out in June when the budget hearings are going on to demand that these streets are fully funded.
Somebody neighbor us.
Question
from the council.
Yes.
We're going to go to board comments. You want to start, Craig?
Well, I have a question, which is, where is the lowest portion of the terminus of the stairs in relation to peak maximum high tide? Peak maximum high tide line.
Yeah, it's shown.
Do you have the drawings?
I'm looking at the drawings. I can't. And I couldn't see where.
I guess to put a finer point
on this, at a 7.5 foot high tide, how high up the stairway is the water going to come?
Or maybe this is it right now.
I would probably 3/4 the way up the bottom.
Concrete footing.
Okay, so
it's because we have a
sea level. Also, there's wind without wave action too, right? So
right, I'm just saying, but I'll assume a seven foot high tide on a relatively calm day. So the lower portion of the stairway at peak high tide is going to be substantially submerged.
Mm-hmm. So when you guys looked at all the different water levels that it goes through, I know the drawing here, I guess it only shows up to the mean sea level, but we can always add in the line to show you where the...
Should be able to walk through.
Where do I see the mean high tide line?
It's on the right-hand side. There was a...
It says MSL.
MSL.
Scroll through.
Mean sea level. Okay, gotcha. That's what I was just, you know. There's really no other way to deal with that.
Right, Anthony?
What is your design target for resilience in the 20 years is this expected to last?
So the city doesn't have a service life for these structures. We generally look at 50 years. If it's a very important structure, if it's a
up here, there's life safety, sometimes 275, but generally 50 is our target.
Great question.
Have you considered something to sort of diffuse the wave energy, break it up? I mean, they just didn't want it larger, and they put these, not really like them, but it was one example of big concrete pillars.
So commonly referred to as riprap or other kind of structures. The Coastal Commission doesn't like turning beach into rocks, right? So they invested in a
different angle of the concrete or something like that.
Right, there are some systems that can do that. We have looked at the alignment so that we're not getting the waves straight on right now. It's already in an angle, so there is deflection. And right now we're looking at actually deflecting the front wall up so that there's more of a deflecting action of that. And it'll also give us some additional concrete for, you know, the resiliency. That'll be in the final from 65 to 100.
Okay.
So I'm interested to discuss design a little bit too, and maybe it's too late if you're at 60%. It seems like there maybe should be an opportunity for us to review it before you get to 60%. But you talked about, you know, resiliency, and I'm wondering, to just echo some of the public comment too, could you talk a little more in detail about the comparison between a fully concrete structure like this and something that would allow pass-through, whether that's, you know, stainless steel pole and rail structure like you see in Laguna?
Sure. So several different designs were examined during the process. One of them event was the kind of separating the stairs from the foundation. Mm-hmm. And what happens is when you have that, you actually have two structures down there. And when they're loaded independently, it's much less resilient, right? So the stairway can kind of rock in its foundation and create cracking. There's also, if you have a stainless steel stairs that land, the way that stainless steel stays from rusting is it creates a passivization layer. It's kind of like a crust that protects the steel. When you have it on a sandy beach, that crust keeps getting worn away. So as durable as you think of as stainless steel, when it's actually in sand and surf, that durability. Someone here mentioned that they've lost the railings on Escanero twice because it wasn't protected, right? So those issues were examined, they're looked at. We feel like this is the most robust solution. We also looked at all concrete, so that we had a concrete kind of a beam. And it's the same thing. You've got, you know, you're taking those loads. No matter how you kind of arrange it, the ocean's gonna hit, right? So whatever cross section you're looking at, it's a target. So you've got to be able to absorb that, and the deflection can be kind of around, but if you start to have multiple structures, they want to pull away from each other and move, and it becomes quite a challenge.
Yeah, I understand the floating. It seems like, in my opinion, you want to allow flow rather than fighting as much as possible, but if you've done your analysis to understand two things, I guess, lifetime, right, and if this design is meant to last a lot longer than the examples you're giving with stainless, then that makes sense to me. My only other question is cost-benefit analysis, because I know concrete is very expensive. So is this, you know, how does that compare?
It's actually comparable to stainless steel. Stainless steel is also expensive.
Yeah.
If you're doing traditional steel, like...
But this much concrete seems like it's a sizable domino, but go ahead.
Right, well, so if you do, are you doing stainless steel, you would still need a concrete foundation, right? So you're still holding that stainless in place with concrete, whether it's a pile or a large block. There's not... you can't make the stainless strong enough just kind of hanging there. It would be, a massive amount of steel. It would be cost ineffective. So we did look at all those solutions, and they're closer than you think. So even though it looks like a lot of concrete, it's the savings isn't extraordinary with stainless steel.
I'll just add to that too. There's also it's not just the cost of building the stairs, right? When we walk away after they've been built, they have to be maintained for the duration, and so there's an ease of maintainability too that we're looking at for maintenance costs. So there's a long-term cost associated too.
Do we have any more board questions?
I've got one. Now your design is to withstand 100 year storm, right?
Which comes every 100 years.
Year storm. Yeah. Not 50 years total, but 100 year storm. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So with climate change, we're getting 100 year storms every few years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not
it doesn't come once every 100 years.
Climate science more. I mean, if you look, it's a real event.
So if several of those hit, is the structure still going to be there?
Excuse me?
I said if you get several hundred-year storm events.
That's the intent. So we have what's called elastic performance. So when the storms do hit, we don't want anything to start to break or fail. We want it to perform normally every single time.
Okay. Two questions. So I think it looked like the stairwell was separated from the relatively new seawall that's behind it. Is there a reason that it's set off and not abutting, connected, or in some way joined to it to hopefully help back up any force from the waves pushing the floating stairwell that's looks like it could be 10 feet away from that wall?
Yes. So the seawall is designed independent of our piece, right? If you start to add structure to that, you change the way the seawall performs. So if we were to do that, we probably would have been ripping out whole sections of the seawall, the connecting portions, the reinforcing portions, and it would have turned into a much bigger, more expensive project. It would have taken much longer. Also, the permitting would have been different if we were actually taking down that seawall, and it would have added more time to your long way to
it's
your
so absurd to you.
Makes sense. And the second part was, you said there were like stainless steel railings or something that's not concrete. Is there a way to avoid any other material and maybe just have like an inset
beam
or something?
Yeah, so in final design, we'll be looking at that. They can have cutouts kind of that, you know, you can put a railing in that is just a cut in the concrete. There's some issues with that for durability. You have to make sure there's still cover for the steel that's inside and other issues. But the final design, the railings aren't designed yet. That would be a final design.
Virginia, thank you for one more thing. Yes, I'm not that familiar with the process, but could you tell us, does this design go before the Coastal Commission for approval? At the year approval? And at what point?
I'm going to start our environmental team with the city. Thanks. I'm Gretchen Eicher, City of San Diego Environmental and Permitting Public Works. And our project has been submitted to the Development Services Department for review, and the Coastal Commission has already reviewed that initial review packet and provided us comments.
So they're involved. Thank you.
Last one more quick question.
We have 5 more minutes on this before I have to go to the next one, so you each have a minute.
Sure, I'll take 30 seconds. We just reviewed another stairwell about 3 blocks south. I can't remember what intersection that is. But is there any continuity design elements or anything that is similar or can be have continuity between the two projects since how these are both possibly going to be built within a 5-year span?
To the best of my knowledge, that is not a city project. So it's just been a lot, and then you have to fully fund each step of the process. So you have to be able to fully fund the engineering, the design, the feasibility study, and the construction before you can start.
How does it get here?
That was an emergency permitting situation. So they do the work first, and then they get the permit after. Okay, did you have a quick question? And then
All right. Yeah, all I want to say is the end of the street doesn't seem to be included at all in this. Are we going to be left with that ugly, rusted out chain link fence still, or can we incorporate something similar to, say, Santa Cruz or Narragansett, where there's just a small vehicle barrier, it opens up the views? I feel like this would be an opportune time to incorporate that into this project. And I know that the adjacent apartment complex has been friendly to opening up that entire space, and they have an encroachment maintenance removal agreement on part of that complex as well. So that would be awesome for the community if that could be able to.
I think it's something we can look into, but at the end of the day, our number one concern too is life and safety. And it's not just vehicles that we have to prevent from falling overboard, it's also pedestrians and people who are coming to look at the views. So, I mean, it's something that we can look at with our design team, but we have to make sure life and safety is always a top priority.
Well, thank you, guys.
So I
I think we would all agree that we probably want to see this project again when the design is 100% complete. I would smile favorably upon tabling this action item until we can see 100% of the design, but I do thank you guys so much for coming out, and I hope that this was helpful for you as well. So, yeah. If it's quick.
Very quick.
We got
I don't know if anybody's been up to Goleta about Santa Barbara. There's a pier there where people drive their vehicles and drop their boats into the water, into the ocean. Anyone that know? It's a state campground. My question is, if you some settlement and stainless steel would just drop down and you know, you press the button, the switch, you go in and drive down on this pier and drop their boats.
That's not a question, sir.
But I have a better app. It's an app for only ocean beach people. And then you get the fucking do that.
Get a motion.
I'll make a motion to table this until we can see 100% of the design.
Do I have a second?
I second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
I go with that.
All those opposed? All those abstaining? Okay, thank you. I'll be in touch.
Kevin was opposed.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't know why.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. Orchard.
So that's good to see our taxpayers' money going to work right here in our community. What they need to do with the cement is they need to put a coating over it. They need to paint it. Because what happens is cement is porous. And you've got some steel girders inside there, and they start crushing it, and it breaks the cement up. I've been with the Navy for 30 plus years. I've seen it.
Yeah.
Buildings are falling apart.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Really,
if you don't paint it,
I know, because it's it goes fast.
Yeah, and usually I try to, just get the opposed people, but sometimes I'm writing and I can't.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Happy to help.
It says 60% right here.
Yeah.
Do you think the city is sad that we didn't approve the project?
Yes.
Did they have to come back?
Yes.
So. Okay.
They left their plans.
But do they have to come here at 60% design no matter what?
I think so.
And then we're like, we didn't
That's
come back again.
So what they're doing at this point is they're coming in and they're asking for ideas and opinions.
Yeah.
And they want to make sure that
from
they build something for
the
community.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they get input, from us now, they can do the rest of the process and move on.
And just
move on.
Yeah, we're like, well, we want to keep it.
Jesus. Okay. I don't want more paper.
So much paper.
I know. I don't want any more.
It's just for loading the things on the back.
Pretty.
Yeah, I really like them.
I know. But, they look so fancy for OB, but they're cute.
Just wait, because there's always there's
people. I'm not happy about that. Oh, really?
This was a very...
All right, guys, let's back up.
Okay.
This is where most of the people are.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay. Interesting.
So Deborah, this is Deborah. She is the manager. She'll be giving us the presentation. My name is Deborah Waters. I'm a GEO that we previously on the previous meeting that we had here. I'm the architect of the project for 4640 Orchard Avenue. We're proposing to recertify the two lots that have been previously announced prior to being worked by the council after the 1989. To clarify, this is not a lot. We're not asking for any sort of variance. What we're proposing is compliant with both the San Diego Municipal Code and the Ocean Beach Community Plan. The client, our civil engineer, took considerable time prior to undertaking this project to meet with the city and find out what was permitted under the current development regulations and the municipal code.
I don't think so.
These are a little hard to see. Can you turn the lights down?
It's really, it's like an all or
nothing.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, 5 seconds.
That was a quick five seconds.
property, which is shown in these pictures here, has been in a state of disrepair for quite some time, with debris that has been accumulated in and around the lot due to the condition of the existing residence and the fact that the City of San Diego's Historical Bureau deemed it to not have historical significance. We're proposing to demolish the existing home and construct two new two-story detached single-family dwellings on the existing lot with detached two-car garages. I know that there have been some concerns about developing on the 25-foot lot. However, it's shown on this map, a little bit hard to see, but if you look at the property, our proposal is right in the center, the red dot, and the other properties that are aligned in red are existing 25-foot lots in the area that have single-family homes on them or attached side-by-side condominiums. So this makes a 25-foot and 50-foot wide lot with some narrow and some wider homes is already part of the residential fabric of this community. These are a few pictures of homes on the block on Orchard. Some have 25-foot lots, others have 50-foot lots. Even the one on the bottom, it's hard to see, but the bottom right is spread over a 50-foot lot, but the left side of that property has a similar bulk and scale to what we're proposing. These photos show adjacent properties developed on the 25-foot lots as well as one ranch cottage home on a 50-foot wide lot. The project on the bottom of the screen was recently completed on Orchard, just down from our site. And each new home is on a 25-foot lot. The site slopes from the street down to the back, so by the time you get to the back alley, you can see that they have a very tall three-story building at that point, which is not what we're planning. If one single family home is built on the site, existing what I call larger bulk mass residents in and around the neighborhood. There's a number of these that I saw, and I just picked out a few. And these houses are built over the two lots and have what I would consider a mass bulk and scale that's not in character. And that would be something that would, this project might look like if we were to develop over the two lots and have a single family residence. So unlike the large map of homes that I showed you in the previous slide, we're proposing to have view preservation as demonstrated in the diagram on the bottom, where you talk about having space between the buildings and you talk about breaking down the massing with, you know, sloped roofs, gable roofs, and that's in terms of looking at your right-hand picture versus your left-hand picture, we feel that what we're proposing very much fits into the York Community Plan in terms of trying to preserve views in the area. This is our site plan, and I just kind of cleaned it up so it was basic. But it's so we have two houses. We have a good sized front, a good sized backyard, and two garages at the back off the lane. Again, the client elected not to do carports, and as a result, the houses are actually smaller than we could have built because the FAR could have been closer to 400 square feet greater for the houses because carports are exempt from FAR. But
he decided to actually build smaller houses and actually put in garages, which we feel is probably a better choice in this particular neighborhood.
I'm going to point it out, but the existing house is dotted on here. So I don't know how I'm going to do this. So this is the edge of the existing house porch right here. And this is the edge of the porch for this house, and this is the edge of the porch for this house. The existing facade of this house is back over here, and this is sort of the outline of that house. So our front porches are currently sitting further back on the property than the existing house, and the facade of the main house, these two houses are sitting further back than the facade of the existing house as well on the property, which also will help to promote view preservation down the street. Although the zoning allows for a three-story building and a building height of 30 feet, we chose to design these far below the maximum building height and only go two stories. The front porches are designed to break down the mass of the home from the street face, and the upper balconies further enhance the architectural interest while providing connection to the community throughout their space with direct visual access to the street. The yard is being graded down in the back, so the homes do not sit separately high from the street, allowing more connectivity between the homes and the community. We put a great deal of care and thought into the design of this project, and we believe we meet many of the Ocean Beach urban design goals as follows. In terms of coastal views, protected pedestrian-friendly walkable neighborhood, the design of a two-story, two small homes instead of one large home, and then the use of gable and hip roofs are proposed to minimize massing. We designed the homes to be far below allowable building height. We set the homes back from the street. The proposed location of the new home is further back on the site than the existing home. We are proposing lowering of the existing back grade of the properties to reduce height and create more connection to the public right-of-way. We are proposing to add two new shade trees in the right-of-way. The homes have been designed with porches and balconies facing the street to create pedestrian interest. A high degree of design excellence is obtained by providing stepping back at the massing from the street. The proposed two homes instead of one reduces the bulk and the scale. We designed articulated and larger fenestration along the street facade. We created a variety of design elements, roof forms, materials, colors, to integrate with the diverse skyline materials, textures, and colors seen in the surrounding community. For sustainability and energy performance, we are proposing to be solar ready. Cool roofs will be installed. The garages will be electric vehicle charging station ready. Low water use plumbing fixtures and high efficiency appliance furnace and ACs will be utilized. Two new street trees will be installed to provide shade as well as improve air quality. And by designing a two-story structure, it reduces the impervious footprint and increases the landscape areas on this property, reducing the contribution to the heat island effect. Thank you for your time.
So I have a couple of people who signed up for community comments, so I'm going to get to them first, and then I'll open it up for other community comments. So first I have Ann Simmons.
I'd like to defer to John O'Neill.
Oh, okay, yeah. Everyone can, yeah. So if you don't mind, I'm actually going to go to Al, because he's signed up, and then I'll go to you, John, if that's okay. So Al Whitley. Thank you, Al.
Hi, everybody. I'm Al Whitley. I'm one of the International Neighbors. I just want to let you guys know that we didn't find this out until the planning meeting for this project. Apparently, essentially, Devers to Proud, Orchard to Santa Cruz, with the latest community plan, was rezoned multifamily. None of the property owners were informed. So John wasn't, Ann wasn't, we weren't. So I just want to let you know that we didn't know until the planning meeting that the area had been rezoned. This project does not comply with our own glasses. Section 4.2.8 of the community plan. I'm not going to get into the semantics of whether you're splitting vertically or, you know, lot splitting, but I know that they need a waiver that has to go all the way up to city council to get this project to happen. I haven't gone and counted all the houses on our side of the block, but of all the houses on that side of the block, one house, which is next to us, Lou's house, the yellow one, is the only property that's a 25-footer, and that was an infill project. We would rather see this project have its lot split horizontally so that from the street, the rhythm and character of the neighborhood can be maintained. So please deny this project. Thank you.
Okay, John, I'll go.
Kevin's
on here.
Can I just stay right here?
Yeah, just stand.
Yeah. I have lived at 4624, so a couple doors up, for 46 years. And seen a lot of changes like we all have in San Diego, born and raised in North Park. When these kind of things come in, I think it's attractive. It changes the neighborhood in the sense of parking and traffic and noise, because right across the street from me, they did street condos, and it has changed the neighborhood so much, because they all park, even though they have garages on the alley, they all park on Orchard. Can't even get a parking place anymore. I park on the alley. I have no parking in front of my house anymore. So my concern is that. And what's the setback in, between those houses and the neighbor? Side setback.
Side is 3 feet.
3 feet. So we go from 5 feet to 3 feet between houses. That's a concern also. If you have a noisy neighbor, you hear them blowing their nose. So those are my concerns, and you know, it's nice, but it will change things to a certain extent, and I just say that because of 46 years of living in the same house.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I make one comment on that?
Yeah, I'm going to open it up for more public comment. I just had, go for it, 2 minutes.
We are adding parking because there is an existing curb cut that we're filling in, so along Orchard Avenue, so we are adding parking for this. At least street parking for this project.
And where is that going?
In front of the property. Because there's an existing curb cut driveway that we're filling in.
Right. So if you did have to do it front to back, you'd keep the curb cut to allow for garage access for the front unit,
right.
And then you create a garage access for the back.
Absolutely.
Got it.
So you're saying you're filling in that area,
yes.
Which is 10 feet. So you're not allowed to create, you're creating half the parking place.
No.
Well, it'd be more than 10 feet. I think the curb cut, I can't speak to that, but maybe 12 or 14 feet, I think.
So 3/4 of the parking.
More than what's there now, I think.
Right. Do we have any other more community comments?
Yes,
please.
I didn't sign up, but
that's it. Just state your name.
And when I
I think the ones on Brighton were like a million something.
1.5.
Yeah.
1.4.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're right by the beach. I mean, they're a block from the beach.
I mean,
so,
some things
yeah.
in perspective. There's a one home about 2 blocks up the street on Orchard from this property. It was a new build, two-story, and I think the list price was over $3 million. So that's not what we're trying
it's
to do.
It's still sitting on the market.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, it will probably sit for a while.
It will sit for a while. And then those homes that you showed also that are split lot, one of them is about a little bit longer. And that was done through a ministerial process. So they didn't come in front of the planning board and get any permission to do what they did. They just did it.
Well, we don't like to cheat. I play by the rules. That's why we're here.
The only other one that's split the lot. Yeah. Okay, do we have any more community comments? Because I did have a couple of emails that I got. Sure, and I sort of wanted to respond to that, and I do get that maybe on this one little section of block on that side, there's one only 1.5 foot lot, and then we're proposing, you know, but there are with the condos and the other side of the street, there's that, and then on the adjacent street over there's a number. So, you know, we're not talking about one block, we're talking about a
I think that these are designed really nicely, and I like to see the design elements here. I think just in general, I feel obligated to state that we need more housing, period, in San Diego, and whatever we can do to add units that are affordable, and people like me are trying to live and buy property in Ocean Beach, and we need options. I would even like to see these as, you know, two-unit properties each, because I think that that's viable in this space. So yeah, whatever we can do to add housing.
I concur.
Thanks. Yeah. So is there only 3 feet between the two houses?
No, between the two houses there will be six feet, and then there will be 8 feet on either of the other sides. Oh. Yeah.
I've got good, bad, and then maybe a suggestion. So I'm going to echo some of the comments. I mean, I think the design gives good consideration to the community plan. I personally love the porches. I think that's a good touch. The consideration that you gave to the front setbacks, I think that's great. You know, thinking about where the neighbors' front facades live as well. Where I really struggle, I personally strongly dislike the 3 foot setbacks, especially for something that's 2 stories tall. I mean, that setback is maybe okay for a single story. The reality is, if you're second story, there's no natural light coming in, you know, between those homes. And if you're lucky, east or west. Which brings me to my suggestion. It's not quite the horizontal proposal, but why not stagger these a little bit?
They are staggered.
I mean, significantly. So one's further ahead than the other one going
right.
east to west, and that way you've got light coming in the east side and the west side of both homes.
Yeah, they have some staggering. You're right, it's not. I can't remember what the difference is, maybe 5 feet or something. You know, if we staggered even more, we're reducing a livable, usable backyard for one of the units.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you look at the two things. Okay, we're
do we compromise light, or do we compromise giving them a usable backyard? So it's kind of, you know, we might solve one issue and create maybe an even more situation.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I'm all for green space too, and I think you'd still have a sizable yard there, even with a little bit more staggering, and it kind of, to Jenna's point, I mean, it also allows for these buildings to be a little smaller, in my opinion, if you want to maintain a yard, which makes the price a little bit more affordable too. And there are projects going up on Niagara right now, on a lot that's going to put four of these, and they're giving great consideration to how would you stagger that east to west. I think that's a really important detail to consider.
And we didn't maximize FAR in this project either, so I think
understood.
And nor did we go up to the three-story height, 30 foot. You know, we're far below that, so that, you know, the amount of light coming between is minimized by, you know, those sort of
things. And it's the light for the people who inhabit the homes, but it's also the neighbors. If you've got that stated setback, then it doesn't feel like these are so omnipresent right up against the street, right? So it's not a wall.
Andrew? Just a kind of comment or question. I see a lot of homes that have this kind of scale, that have the separated garage built out more as a granny flat opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I know you still have part, you want the garage to be a garage parking space, but is there a opportunity for like a smaller efficiency rental? You see it, a lot of folks in this neighborhood really just have single room studio apartments they rent versus, you know, being able to afford the size house. So can you accommodate something like that?
Without doing research on it and checking, I don't know on this particular property if that's feasible or not. I'd have to look into, you know, the guidelines for accessory dwelling units at the city of San Diego and see whether, you know, but I can't really answer that. I don't know if either of you have, you know, I think
the plans are free right now.
Yeah, they're trying to get them to build more.
That's where I'm from, and yeah, and then they do, you know, they do a lot to try and accommodate, but I think the one thing I'm hesitating on is the FAR, and I don't know, you know, I know that Encinitas gives you a bonus of FAR if you're going to add an accessory dwelling unit, but I don't know that from San Diego because I haven't done an accessory dwelling unit in San Diego, so I don't have that answer without research.
I think it would just be worth consideration as you get that.
George?
No.
Craig?
Well, it's not horribly inconsistent with the mix of structures in that block of orchard. So,
any questions? Any comments?
I don't see it as being horribly out of character with the neighborhood.
Okay, Virginia.
I think that a lot of scale into designing these so that they would fit within the parameters of our land, and I do like them, and the reality is that we do need the smaller housing that rather than having something that is almost 5,000 square feet, which is out of reach of almost everyone. So I do agree, that's a good point, if they could be offset by maybe a third or as much as half. If the one would have a larger front yard, which they may enjoy that way, and a smaller backyard, that wouldn't be that much of a disadvantage. And it would provide more air circulation and more light to get to both houses. So overall, I really like to see something that's been carefully planned to fit into our parameters of our plan. Thank you. Change. I appreciate your comments.
Kevin?
I notice you don't have a view from what the neighbors look at, which is like a 70-foot wall, two stories high, 3 feet from their property. They look great in the front. And you lose all the other design aspects when you split the lot in small ways. And we've 3 foot setbacks, and then you've got 3 feet, and then a property line, and then 3 feet, and then three. You get these little half plates that are useless and a waste of space. So they actually take away from functional yard space. And I don't know if you're going to put a fence between these in addition to that,
but it just it doesn't benefit anyone. It doesn't benefit the neighbors uphill because that might as well be built in for how they're concerned. In fact, this lot is, as it's being split, is substandard and would not be allowed anywhere in San Diego. The only reason it's allowed in this instance is because the original 1887 lot layout in Ocean Beach, which I think was atrocious, really, and they were merged, and that is why there's an exception that allows this to be split back up. Otherwise, this would never be allowed to be split in these 25-foot lots. And the community plan speaks against that, discourages lot splitting for this reason, because we get these buildings like we have on Santa Monica and Ebers, where there's four in a row there, and they're just these long shotgun houses. Now, regarding the number of units, you can build two units. You can build two units plus an ADU without splitting the lot lengthwise, or without splitting the lot at all. So that's not off the table. The lot split is not creating housing here, and I don't think it's creating affordable housing either. So if I wanted to create an affordable place to live, I wouldn't build it to the maximum FAR. This is maximum FAR. It's 0.75, 0.74. So it's 99% there.
Right. It's just that we could have done.
I know you could have made
and
even.
And we could have made, you know, if we wanted to. And I'll be honest, I've worked on projects where I have done that. And, you know. So
I get it. It could be even larger.
It could be. The houses could be larger.
I just, that's of no consequence to me. It just doesn't. I get it. As an investor property, trying to make a return on the investment, I get that. I don't think we need to be supporting these as a board, because the next guy's going to come in and say, well, see what they did? We're going to build another one of those. And I judge every one of these projects like it's going up next door to me. In fact, I have one of these next door to me, and it blocks all my sunlight. It's terrible. And then the city granted them a variance to exceed the far beyond that. And that house is never going to go away. So I feel for the neighbors on this one. I'm not going to be supporting this project, and I don't like this idea that we have to build everything to the maximum. If I don't build two houses, it's going to be one 4,500 square foot house. That's not true. Most of the houses, I looked at the FAR on all the houses on this entire block, and the average FAR is about 0.35 for this entire block. There's that one condo complex that's about 0.6 or so. And then there's one other property that was just recently built. It's a very low density block, so I don't think this.
I know, but your current community plan and the community plan of the city are asking for densities.
They call the density in conformance with the rest of the neighborhood, and I'm going to take seven. Thank you.
Density is housing units. Density is not square footage.
Okay, so just to go through it again, the yellow house on here is the only one that is a 25-foot lot. The brown house in the bottom right-hand corner is a front-to-back unit. The condo complex is not on one lot. It's spread out over two. That's why it's so large. Every other house that does have two units on a lot is front-to-back in the rest of the neighborhood, pretty much. I find it extremely hypocritical of this board that we demanded that the Cape May person flip their houses to conform to the rest of the neighborhood, and you're not asking the same thing of this. The lot split is clearly because they want to sell the property separately, and if they put it all on one lot, it'll probably be deed restricted, and you won't get an investor in it to buy it as short-term vacation rental. We're 10 minutes over time. Does anyone have any last comments before I call for a motion?
I thought the lot split bothered me a lot too. I mean, to call it what you will, but it is allowing for two house fronts to face the street. And I thought it was out of our hands, but whatever the city council decides to do is, and that's what would tip me in favor of approving it. Otherwise, I would have not approved it.
We shouldn't base our approval based on what the city can do. We have the right to appeal, and I know our appeal didn't come in our favor, but I see no reason. This is significantly different than an ADA ramp. versus actually following the community plan while keeping the same number of units. We're not fighting density. We're fighting for the actually legally passed document by the city council to actually hold developers who are coming in, who, you know, have no intention of ever living on this property, to build what the neighborhood is looking like. If you had someone coming in, buying the house themselves, and building a different house, we'd be getting a much different development project here. So,
quick question.
Again, we're 10 minutes over, so one more question. So then
can I just say something to that? Because some of the pictures I showed of these larger homes, so let's say it was a developer or a homeowner that came and bought the lot, had somebody design. So if we go back to those houses that are the larger homes, it's near the end. When I look at these houses, you know, I don't see how these sort of fit into the scale and character of
these are in Peninsula. So this has nothing to do with our community plan or our plan on board.
Aren't there two on
That house is on Del Mar, and it's the block between
those two houses are in Del Mar.
That one's on Del Mar. Yeah. My friend Jim Manos owns it. That one there, the lower right hand corner, that is between Frau and Guzov. That one over there, I believe, is on Orchard, and that is on Orchard. That is my block. It's a 4400 block of Orchard between Guzov and Santa Barbara.
Look how far it is from the neighbor's house.
That one there is what I refer to as Mansion Row on Del Mar, which is within the Ocean Beach Planning Board. And that is a strange anomaly. I don't know how that happened, but that entire north. Can you answer that question, Kevin? Entire north side of Del Mar there?
That's an anomaly there.
Yeah.
I move to recommend Project B denied based on the orientation of the law school and lack of compliance.
Can I comment on what's up before you make that motion?
We're going to vote on it. Hope might fail. I don't know.
Do I have a second?
What was the motion? I'm sorry.
I move to recommend denial of the project specifically due to the lot split and orientation of the buildings and lack of compliance with the community.
Can I add an amendment to that? That for that much FAR, it should have additional units.
I agree with you, but it's too confusing.
I
can
demand them to.
Okay.
Kevin, quick question, but should there be a note to which element that this isn't conforming to?
It's the same reason we denied the Cape May project, because it doesn't fit into the conform to the neighborhood, where they had the bigger unit in the front and the smaller unit in the back, and everyone wanted the canyoning of that neighborhood to have the same.
But that project was a little different, though. They actually were planning to have a living unit in the back and a living unit in the front. This one is just a living unit that takes up 2/3 of the lot and has a garage in the back. Now, we don't know what the intention of whoever's going to buy this property is going to do with that garage in the back, but that property that we refused was actually planned to have two different units, and they were going to put the tiny one in the back and the bigger one in the front.
Right. Out of conformance with the rest of the neighborhood, and this is two units.
It's one unit on each parcel.
Yeah, that they're asking to split. But that's the same size parcel that the other one has. They're all 50-foot long. Guys, there's a motion on the floor. Do I have a second? I'm going to second it. I'll second it. Okay, all those in favor of Kevin's motion, please raise your hand. All those opposed? All those abstaining? Motion passed.
Because we bought
units. All those in favor? I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2,
easy, cowboy.
10 to 3.
Thank you.
Just for the record, my reading of orientation.
Richard, me, and Virginia were opposed to his motion.
Yeah. So
we are talking about some very interesting
orientations.
I just heard one.
make it good.
I just feel like, yeah, we don't need any more million-dollar homes. That's,
I don't remember.
We need density. We need. I don't care about split lot. Honestly, this should be four units on those lots.
The majority of that is here for that.
Yeah.
Because we were split.
Yeah.
I just have denied due to. I just wrote down. Kevin, I just wrote down deny project due to lot split. If you want to elaborate on that, yeah. If you want to elaborate on that, then please do. And I have the vote count and who voted, so you don't need to fill that in. I like the project.
I think it looks nice. I think they should put you. I actually have no problem with building like this. It just should have more units. I'm never going
to
buy this.
Yeah, but here's the truth. You won't be able to afford it.
I can't afford that.
I couldn't afford it.
Yeah. So, like, who are these for? If not
you know what's
for.
Funny is... That property sold for like $790.
They're not going
to
build.
You put $300,000 in to get a big property.
Well, I think you should pay the show.
Beautiful.
Tell that to the neighbor.
Why build an extra
one?
Sitting on 50.
I know. That's why I'm on the board there, so that people know that
they won't get as much money for
want
back to back.
Smaller housing units, so that we can afford to live in.
That's why I'm voting.
Yes.
To deny it.
No, I voted yes. Go for it. This owner here, he jumped through so many hoops, and he did a lot of planning.
Yeah.
He walked through it. He did everything that everybody's asking. And we're sitting here talking about we need more units, and here we are with BAM.
I know.
Well,
that's why I wanted to amend it and say, I'm denying it because I want more units.
Here, go ahead and read this. This is very interesting.
What is this?
I don't know who's that. That was from, look, it's at the bottom. It's not from many of the board members.
Orchid. Okay. Okay.
Okay, so we're on AI3.
Got back to follow, man.
Yeah, right. Good evening. My name is David Marsh. I'm the architect. And we've presented to the board. This is our second round. We had a recommendation to, well, that was with the planning committee, recommendation to present to the board. So I'd like to just do a quick presentation. Our project is fairly straightforward. From the standpoint that this is the main residence right here on Cable Street, so the address is 2077 Cable Street. The premise is that it's a relatively flat lot. Essentially, we're building a standalone structure towards the rear of the lot with a three-car garage down at the first level and an ADU on the second level. And essentially, the goal is to provide additional parking, which right now, this lot has no off-street parking at all. There's the main residence, which we're not touching. It's just getting taking care of some deferred maintenance, being painted, and things of that sort. And what we're able to do is off the alley, we'd have car access and be able to park now three cars on the lot, so improving the surrounding parking on the actual for the actual street for the other residences, and also providing parking for the ADU that comes with that. Based on the size of the ADU and the existing residence, we would have to provide two off-street parking spots, and we're providing three to just make things a little bit better. We had a couple of items that from the last presentation that the board recommended that we address, and we made those changes, and one was to reduce the heat island effect. So we took back part of the paving that we had in that backyard to put in impervious pavers, and then also added some fenestration on this back rails right over here. So I can switch over to a floor plan and kind of go into a little bit more detail. The existing home is roughly a little over 600 square feet, which again, we're not touching. The garage on the first floor is approximately 900 square feet, and the ADU on top, including the stairs, is a little over 1100. The FAR on the lot is the maximum allowed is 0.7, and we're taking it up to 0.65.
Like 4 pounds for the kit.
No.
I know.
Two bedrooms. So, does the front unit have a garage?
No.
So this is, will the three-car garage be for all units?
It's for all of the units.
Okay.
And it's a flat lot, so there's not going to be a lot of grading that we're doing. And we're putting together a landscape plan, so we're beautifying the front as well, and adding trees for shade and things of that sort as well.
So when I assume the two-car garage is for the front unit and the one-car garage is for this back unit?
For the AP, correct.
Uh-huh. And you didn't have to do that because of TK requirements?
No. All we would normally have to provide would be, we would normally have to provide two parking spots, period, based on the size of the ADU and one for the main residence, regardless of size. This is these stairs that lead up, three-car garage is here. This is to orient you. This is the alley side. This is the rear main residence would be over here in the front. Go up to the stairs. We have a living kitchen area and three bedrooms.
Three bedrooms.
Two baths.
Uh-huh. Well, it's marked as an office, right? So two bedrooms and an office. But you're calling it three bedrooms, which I appreciate your honesty.
Because it's private, the city is going to call it a bedroom, whether I call it a bedroom or whatever. So once we open it up to more than 50%, and there's not that idea that privacy can happen there for whatever, then they're not going to count it as a bedroom otherwise.
The ADU has two bedrooms.
You can go to the elevation, so I'll show you what the outside of
that looks like. Separate garages and one large.
It's one large space.
One large. Mm-hmm. So it's
three garage doors.
Three garage doors, but one large.
And that'll be clear. So we have garage door here, so we have a double and a single.
Okay.
And we're breaking down the materials, tipping our hat to some of the materials on the existing home in the neighborhood. There's an apartment complex that has a similar type of parapet flat roof construction towards the rear, so we're mimicking that as well to a certain extent, but not maximizing the height of the structure. We're doing a minimal parapet up to the top just to at least get the slope for the drainage that we need. And that's about it. So we have the wood siding here and a stucco down below to kind of break down the mass a little bit.
Community comments, questions?
Questions or comments?
Can you ask a quick question? Yeah. This year they made it that you have to put solar on your home. Does an ADU count as that? Do you have to put solar?
We're not required for an ADU to put solar on it, but we are designing it to be solar ready.
Okay.
My name is Pete Dustin. I'm the owner of the property, and I'm planning on putting solar on.
Thank you. Do we have any board questions? Anthony?
The existing home, what's the size of the existing?
675.
675? So this is going to be, what's the, this 83 something then?
It's closing in on 1,100 square feet.
Well, but the living space itself, not the garage. The
living space is 1,100.
Okay, so would you be converting the front house to the ADU if this would be the main structure? Because if my understanding is the ADU has to be 50% of the existing
thing. I believe you guys might be able to speak to this. There's ADU accessory dwelling, and then there's an infill that's slightly different if you're taking some of the existing space and it can't be more than 50%. But it's a separate structure.
Oh, it isn't.
Yeah, it's
1,200.
Yeah. So it applies 1,200 is the maximum.
Okay.
Can I ask a very wonky question? What kind of heating system are you using?
We're not at that stage of development. Yeah.
I would encourage you to consider an all-electric heating system so you can make use of that solar energy instead of gas.
That is, what's interesting is about that, Title 24 energy consumption requirements make that very difficult.
So actually they made a bunch of changes, yeah, to the Title 24 requirements, and a number of cities, not San Diego sadly, are enacting REACH codes that are all electric requirement.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it was 38 degrees this morning. And I had to turn on my gas system, which pains me.
Okay. Any other questions?
Nope.
I just think it's nice that a property on Cable Street will come before us and explain to us what's going on instead of leaving an empty lot sitting there for years, so
yeah,
trying to slip one past the goalie. So, I mean, I appreciate it. I think it's a nice project, and I think it's adding,
yeah,
hopefully, more units to more people that we can rent out.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it's a good property for that, and it should have a nice view of the water from that second level over the garage, just down the alley.
Yeah.
I run down there all the time, and I actually looked at this house years ago before you bought it, and I thought, this is a key little piece of property, because there is some water down that alley if you get high enough.
I like the paint job.
Oh, thank you.
I
move to my second.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the project? All those opposed? I will be sending you
guys
the
Craig opposed?
No, I think everybody opposed.
Wait, Craig opposed?
I thought his hand just didn't go down.
No, his hand was just down.
Craig, did you
oppose that?
No.
Oh, your hand was just... it was just... okay. All right,
cool. We're a little bit behind, but we can make up some time, right?
I was lagging. I apologize.
Yes. Mandy, you have the floor, and Ashley as well. So we're going to, I know we heard about pedestrian improvements around Oak Elementary about a year ago, and if you've noticed, there were some improvements. We got the crosswalk lit up, but there's still some more concerns. So the nice ladies at the Oak Elementary PTA
thank you. So I'm Ashley Lewis. Thank you for making time for us and for everybody who stayed to the end. You know, the district safety is not the most thrilling, but there's sometimes. I'm on the board of the Obie Elementary PTA. I also have two children at the school, and I've lived in Obie for a long time. So the reason we're here today is to ask for your support in trying to get some additional traffic safety measures from the city. There's pedestrian safety is an issue at our school every year. It came to a head, especially for us last fall. There was an incident where the sibling of an Obie Elementary student was struck by a car in the intersection of Newport and Nicholas over here on his way to pick up his brother from school, and the car sped off. Some parents had to stop him and get, you know, flag him down. So it just kind of paints the picture of how scary this situation is for our kids. Every year we see the same bad behavior from drivers who are, you know, kind of blowing through intersections and not. They're just more distracted than ever. The cars are bigger than ever. And if you can imagine, you know, we have this historic building that when it was built 100 years ago, traffic in OB looked a whole lot different than it does now. So it was designed without a driveway, without a parking lot. There's no place where you can safely drop off your kids from a car. So pretty much every student who goes to our school has to walk some distance on city streets to get to the school, which is why I think it's really incumbent on the city to make it as safe as possible for our children, which they're small children. It's like preschool to 8th to 4th grade are the grades that go there. So they're young kids that need our help to protect them from the bad drivers in our community, unfortunately. So the things we're asking for the most part from the city, are pretty straightforward. And I have, I did provide the letter. I don't know if you have it on the computer. I apologize for not bringing it. It's not in this presentation. We are asking for the crosswalks in the intersections surrounding the school to be restriped. There are several legs on some of the streets where there's not even crosswalk painting at all, or other places where it's faded and going away. We want to have the yellow continental crosswalk striping on every leg of each intersection to indicate that it is a school crossing at all of those areas. We're also hoping to get some sort of lighted speed limit indicator signage on both north and southbound lanes of Sunset Cliffs Boulevard. Because if you, you know, as you drive past the school, you'll notice there's really not a lot there to alert you of the fact that there's a school coming up. And I think people who don't live in the area, visitors, might not realize it. Also, if they're not paying attention to the speed limit signs, you know, people blow through that street, and there's nothing reminding them of the fact that there are children present and that it's a school day. Whereas, like, when you go to other schools in more suburban areas, you might see, like, the lit up speed limit signs warning you that it's school hours and you need to be driving slowly. We don't have that. So we're hoping to get some kind of lighted reminder to get cars to slow down.
We're asking to make have signage put in place to make right turns on red lights illegal during school hours on the Santa Monica and Newport Avenue intersections and Sunset Cliffs, because we see a ton of people who, as you know, you're trying to make your right turn and you're not paying attention to the pedestrians who are in the crosswalk who think that it's safe to cross, especially with little kids who don't always have the best judgment. So I think that would be a huge improvement, making right turns illegal during the school hours on red lights. We're also asking for the LPI, which I think that we, I am told that we are supposed to get the lead pedestrian interval signal timing changed at Newport and Sunset Cliffs. But for whatever reason, the city decided not to do it at Santa Monica and Sunset Cliffs, which is a very high traffic intersection for pedestrian traffic and also car traffic. There's a ton of people who walk through there every day, so I think that would be really helpful to have that extra few seconds for pedestrians to get into the intersection before the light changes so that they have more time to cross and they're more visible to cars. We are also asking for extending the 3-minute drop-off zone in front of the school to make more of a safe area for the parents who do have to drive or for whatever reason insist on driving, so that they have a safe area to drop off their kids in front of the school without becoming a traffic issue themselves by just stopping in the middle of the street. And then the big ask that we're making, which I don't know how realistic it is, but if we don't ask for it, we'll never get it, is I feel personally, and many of us at the school, other parents in our administration feel, that the city and the school district should be working together to come up with some sort of formal crossing guard program for us, because we do not have crossing guards at our school. We have some community volunteers who do help out in the morning, but they are not in any way formally connected to the school. They don't have any best practices. They have no training. What we really need is properly trained crossing guards in place both before and after school hours, which is completely impossible to try to get a parent-led volunteer program after school because people are working at 2 in the afternoon, or if you're not working, it's because you have a toddler on your hip and you can't really ask for a crossing guard when you're in a caretaking mode like that. So we really need some support from the city. At other schools in other parts of the community, they have 5th and 6th graders who act as they do have a student safety patrol program. We are not able to do that at our school because we only go up to 4th grade, so we don't have kids that are old enough to act as a safety patrol at our school. So we really need some help from the city. And so we have a lovely letter we've drafted that we are actually providing an enclosure on it. There's a memorandum of understanding that we got from the city of Solana Beach, where they actually came to an agreement between their city and their school district to fund a crossing guard program at the high traffic intersection surrounding their school. So there is a model for it that has been done locally. I think it could be very successful, and we are planning to send this letter to Jen Campbell's office and also to the school district, and we are asking for your endorsement.
Great. I would also recommend sending it to Gary Pence. Yeah, he's head of traffic.
Good Pence.
Okay. So Duncan Hughes, Gary. So I'll also copy
both of them.
If this letter passes, I'll CC the both of them, because then they can do the traffic study, and then once the traffic study is done and it's hit a certain threshold, there's really nothing anyone can do to stop putting stuff in. Do we have a motion for the letter? Do we have any questions or comments? Frank, yes.
Just to give you some support and also some history, you know how this crossing section was put in, right? Over here.
The one in the middle of the block.
Yeah. That was parents and people. You know how the Santa Monica streetlight got put in? By parents, back in the 80s. And when I was on the PTA, I was trying to get driveways, more driveways. There is no place to drop off your kid. And I had a kid, no elementary. So I'm just saying, there's a long history of community people and parents, mainly at this school, trying to get help. And the fact there's no crossing guards is almost criminal. I mean, God. You've got two jurisdictions, the school and the city, and they don't really work together. So I'm just trying to give you support.
Thank you.
Go for it,
Do you have any more public comment? Okay.
Yeah, just when you think about motioning, I would actually motion to send it to the school district as well.
Okay. Virginia?
I just had an idea while you were speaking. Is there any chance that the police RSVP volunteers could help with the crosswalk situation?
Well, we have had increased police presence since we've spoken with the local police officers, and we do see them hanging out in the mornings from time to time, and they kind of help keep an eye on our crossing guards. And kind of, we have had a little bit of a presence, but I don't know if it's realistic to expect actual
retired senior volunteer patrol.
Okay.
And they did things like welfare checks on residents, yeah, and looking at homes that where the people are on vacation and things that don't involve conflict. It seems like they'd be ideal volunteers to help with the crosswalk.
That would be lovely. I will have to look into that further because I'm not familiar with it.
It's a great suggestion.
All requests for help from Western have been met. Like, they have upped their presence since Dr. Campbell's office have gotten involved in the last few months. But a lot of it is just, you know, if there's a high amount of call volume, we kind of drop lower on the list with priority. And so there's not been consistency with the requests. You know, if there's a call or something else going on outside or nearby, we don't get that.
Well, true. We don't expect the police to be at our school every day. Like, they have more important things to do. Like, we don't need a trained police officer. We need a crossing guard, which is a much less expensive person to hire.
Anthony?
I brought this up briefly, but have you and the other people, maybe with other PTAs across the city, get together and lobby the city council to fight to create an ordinance to reduce the speed limit within so many feet of a school? 50 miles an hour, it's been done in many municipalities throughout the country. It's extremely effective. I find it is, it's almost embarrassing that in San Diego, the speed limits aren't meters or reduced during school drop off and pick up times during school hours by ordinance, and you have to be fined for violators. I know it's controversial, but I would as a board member, I would endorse that as an ordinance.
We are currently we did receive a letter. I'm a member of the Peninsula Community Planning Board, but my children do attend Ocean Beach Elementary, and I agree with everything Ash is saying because I was here last year as a parent asking for help. We have received a letter of support from the Point Loma Cluster School Foundation for all of the schools here on the peninsula. So currently we're going to be working and approaching each individual school site because they're all unique in their own design and their location to help provide that list of support, like what it is that they need to improve the traffic safety. But with power numbers, I'll definitely take that and then continue to go up to the other clusters.
That would solve a problem across the city by ordering every school that would have a 50-mile-an-hour restriction, and then you put up these temporary signs. It's done in many municipalities and reduced accidents and fatalities and safety concerns. And it pisses off the neighbors, but, you know, who cares? Kids first. That's my opinion.
Such a minor area, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have any other? Yeah, Kevin?
My kids aren't old enough to go there yet, but what happens on Sunset Cliffs?
You have multiples now?
Incredible being there. It's all red, isn't it?
Oh, what do you mean, all red?
There's no parking
here.
No.
There's parking on the street.
On Sunset Cliffs, there's 2 hours.
There's always cars there.
There's always cars
which
there?
Most people don't really pick up on that way. They pick up on Santa Monica.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I feel like it's just in a tight spot, right?
It is.
And Sunset Cliffs gets way too many cars for what it was designed for. Impatient drivers, I think most of them are actually locals trying to get to work.
Locals don't. I mean, it's about parents, I'll be honest. It's like everybody feels
guilty
about it.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that we're trying to educate the community within the school is on Wednesdays, we are doing a walk and roll Wednesdays. We're encouraging the families of the school to walk or bike to school on Wednesdays. And then also in the Orca Slash, we have a school newspaper. We're going to start providing some traffic safety just to help continue to educate the community of the rules and of what's in place.
I guess it's not really a question, but people know the rules. They're violating the rules because they don't care. So we need to control people's behavior either by enforcement or by some psychological changes to the design of the thing. So, sorry, I like anything that makes it more crowded and less like freeway or bowl outs. I love bowl outs for something like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I would totally support. I don't know why they're not already in place.
I would be supportive of that. I just don't know how realistic it is. To get.
Yeah. But I support anything that improves. I know how the drive is right here.
Sure.
You know,
lock it all up.
I'm all about deterring.
Okay, guys,
we
are a little bit behind the next light.
We're happy.
So can I
have a motion, please?
So what does she need? She just
support her letter.
I'll move to support the letter.
Thank you, Craig.
I second.
Thank you, George. I got a second from George. All those in favor? All those opposed? Okay, all those abstaining? Awesome. Motion passes. So I will... Okay, next we have OB Pathways. This is from the Transportation Committee.
We're doing something.
So the Transportation Committee has been working with Nicole over the last few months to come up with something that I think is actually really cool, and PB has some, and we want some too. It's an OB Pathways project, and it's basically signage in strategic areas for bicyclists to commute through Ocean Beach, and the signage itself will have destination points and mileage to destination points. So Nicole was amazing at coming up with all of these destination points, and she made a list of all of the signs that she thought that the area would benefit from having. She also tracked out how many miles it was from destination point to destination point, and she determined that we would have, I think it was a total of 8, how many signs? 10 signs? 5-1? Okay, and then in addition to the signage, she also requested or thought that it would be a good idea to have OB pathway specific sharrows painted on the ground so that people know that that is part of the path. So we have a complete list of all of the signage, the direction of the arrows, the amount of space between point A and point B of the destination points. And on the second page, we list out all of the sharrow locations that we'd like to see. And in addition, there's a sample of what the signage could look like. Pacific Beach has this weird surfboard thing that, it's, you know, from a designing point. And they have some that have little people and, you know, bicycles and stuff at the top. And I'm like, okay, let's just try to make this as simple as possible and just call it OB Pathways, make a big sign that says OB Pathways, and then we can, you know, put the destination points with the markers on them. So if
that
Nicole...
would be the sign of Voltaire.
So...
Yeah, so Nicole probably has some more stuff to say, but that's the gist of it.
No, you did a great job. Thank you, Tracy. I appreciate it. And I can answer any questions. Pathways, OBPD Pathways had a great... It's very successful. They're asking for a phase two. What I've learned, I've actually done a lot of wayfinding, so I helped Beautiful PB with those wayfindings. The city's going to come back and double check all those mileage, so you don't have to worry about like not double checking the mileage. You can look at the destinations and stuff, but with symbols and with being super creative, like their wayfinding is a surfboard on the ground, that's very difficult, very expensive. We're not asking for anything like that. I think OB Pathways gives a, you know, people walking, people riding a bike, riding a scooter, all different modes can realize that that path, that's actually good for even drivers,
mm-hmm.
right?
So, I agree.
The sharrows are basically, if all of you guys know, that little loop-de-loop through the alley, that's where the sharrows come into play. So there's a little bit of sign. We don't ask for more signage at those alleys because there's signage there, unless there wasn't signage. But basically, the sharrow markings kind of tell the biker, make a left, you know, right here, and do the little loop-de-loop.
Nicole, can we just omit any reference to Sunset Coast National Park?
Yeah, really.
Well, that's
a major destination point. It's a major destination point for people.
That's the idea.
Craig, so, I'm sorry. Instagram is blowing that idea.
Local.
And we want to encourage people to get there a different way.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily, we all know, everybody in a car knows how to get to Sunset Coast. They've got it on their Google map. So I'm not, like, this is about, like, saying, look it, you can actually get there in 2 miles and I can go, you know, walk there from OVL,
yeah.
You know, so.
I will support this one contingency.
Oh, my God.
Missing our greatest landmark. And that's
okay, tell me.
Public bathrooms need to be marked.
That's actually not a bad little bathroom symbol.
That's all.
That's funny.
Okay.
I get asked a lot of times. Usually when I'm confronting someone, this is pissing me off.
It's the most common question
asked
on the
beach. Okay, so just
the bathroom
symbol. I'm liking this.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm totally serious.
I have a question.
Yeah,
is there
anything that,
like,
the
yeah,
it's
not a bad
idea.
Symbol there next to you.
I have a question.
Dog beach, bathroom.
Dog beach, yeah.
Lifeguard
tower.
Just a little
symbol.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be
in
the water.
I don't know. I think the entire ocean is a place to pee, but that's all right.
We'll do it later.
Okay.
What is a
Sharrow? So Sharrow is the arrow marking with the bicycle symbol, like on Voltaire Street or like on Bacon Street already. It just symbolizes that you are supposed to share a vehicle.
Yeah.
And it is a standard.
So it says, the bicyclers own the street.
No.
It's
a little
area
of the bike. Share the bike and a car.
Share. Is that where that word derives from?
Yeah. Share.
Shared arrow.
Part
of mine.
Sorry, guys.
Can I just add a
comment about
this? Public?
Okay. Do we have a few more questions?
Just a little comment. I actually think it might be worthwhile to put a bike on the sign, like a person on a bike on the sign. You don't think so? Because I think
that's very narrowing. I mean, people are going to walk. They're going to scooter. They're going to bike. They're going to ride their skateboard.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then PB actually tried to incorporate all of those people, those little pedestrians,
but
and the sign just looks busy and it's hard to pay attention to.
You can't figure out that you can get there with your feet or anything else.
Then you got
to Yeah.
I just mean it might encourage people to think about it that they might not otherwise.
Don't ask people that think.
These are really too small to see.
Well,
it's
a
moving
so
part.
I don't think we have any more questions, suggestions.
Questions, suggestions?
Because it's almost 8 o'clock, so.
Just two questions.
So we're right on agenda here.
Speak up.
How did you determine the location for the sign, the placement of the signs?
I ride
experience
every day, and I kind of just, you know, as a cyclist, how often do I want to see it? Where do I want to see it? There's Brighton is a bike boulevard as well. Bacon is a bike boulevard. I do have a straight and a left arrow, so if anybody knows this bike route, they take Bacon all the way to the end. There's a little hill there, and that corner is kind of tough. The view is nice, but on going home, I'm going to take Del Monte every day. So I really looked at, like, is it Del Monte or is it Narragansett? Which one do I want to be on? You know, so the bus goes on Narragansett, so I really tried to think about those.
Yeah, I just didn't know if there was a protocol for it should be every, you know, mile and a half.
Not necessarily.
Like,
I think just giving people where they're going to come out, so Voltaire.
Because we do want to continue to push bike traffic to our designated boulevards, because I've seen a lot of people riding their bikes down Sunset Coast outside of the natural park, so like right in this main corridor, and that's obviously very dangerous.
No, I get the reason for the project. I'm just questioning, just wondering.
And
what's
the idea is it grows like a tree. So I've done this on MPB and University Avenue here, and it'll grow over the peninsula next. So.
And then last question is, what's the anticipated cost?
Well, it's actually a city cost. It's built into their signage street programs. It's like a stop sign, so it's all
$500.
$500.
Yeah,
$500.
Transportation fund.
If the majority of the destinations are historic or natural in nature, I would encourage you to look at, see if there's like any other sign plans that you can align to, like, you know, historic destinations get the brown signs versus the green ones are for urban.
I think the multitude, if you look at the destinations, the business district, there's the natural park, there's Broadfield, the beach, you know, some of those are your basic big ones. So,
Point Loma High, Liberty Station.
And I'm not labeling schools or, you know, donut shops, but it's more about just really being.
Well, that's why when I see a
brown
sign, I think I'm
heading
to a place of historic.
So I think green means bike.
Oh, okay.
So I think we're thinking green is white.
Transportation.
Yeah.
Transportation.
How far along is this? I mean, it looks pretty much ready to.
It's ready to roll.
Go.
I'm ready to. Yeah. I came from Mobility Board tonight, so just FYI, Mobility Board is what I sit on. I represent District 5.
Okay.
I don't represent District 2. But, you know, pushing it through. Yeah.
We've been working on this for like 4 or 5 months, I mean, it's ready to roll.
I can support it.
Yeah, Tracy, do we have a motion that you would?
We did have a motion. I think it was written on the first page there. So the Ocean Beach Planning Board recommends the following wayfinding signs and Sharrow's street paint markings
to guide
and support people riding bikes and other micro-mobility devices through the Ocean Beach community from Robb Field to Sunset Cliffs National Park. Natural park. a total of 10 signs, 5 signs, blah, blah, blah. It's all right there, dude. You guys can read it.
An additional
is that your motion?
That is the motion that Nicole and I kind of finalized. Yeah. We can make a motion. I'll make it, yeah.
Thank you, Anthony. All those in favor?
Oh, yeah. Thanks. I don't know. What the hell? Obviously, if I make a motion, I'm in favor of it. All right.
I still think there should be a bike on the sidewalk.
Action item 6. I have Rick here to just kind of briefly go over the problem. But then it's just a basic ask for us to be able to officially liaise with the Mission Bay Park Committee. Because this is technically in their planning board, but the transportation wants to work with them on river bike path.
So just quickly, though, I mean, one of the reasons why we have to, like, I feel like we need to officially get approval from the board to do this is because the transportation subcommittee was thinking that we could just go and knock on their door and say, hey, we want this help. But I think it would be a stronger opinion or a stronger motion if we, as a board, signed on to this.
Yeah, and we're technically supposed to approve the liaisons, and our Mission Bay Park liaison was Dan. Mm. No longer sits on the board. So...
So, Rick, do you want to just start talking?
So we discussed this transportation board. We're looking for support, like Tracy said. Go forward to the Mission Bay Parks. They have the money for repair on the path. So the path that we're referring to is a heavily used path on the south side of the San Diego River from the Sunset Cliffs Bridge here all the way down, all the way west. But the section that really needs the most repairs, the first 300 or 400 yards, you can see an example of some of that here.
This is right when you enter OB and you kind of go to the skate park area. This is the entryway for bicyclists, and it's just in complete disrepair.
We have hotels such as the Hyatt and the Dana. They have bicycles that people rent from, you know, around the
There
world,
should be more on page two, Anthony.
And scooters for the tourists. And these same folks take advantage of our business district, and they come through that path. And it needs some TLC there. It's been long overdue. The transportation request repairs to be expedited, made a priority into our lovely beach community, so we'll have a smooth experience. And I'm looking for the board to kind of love that.
Smooth and safe experience.
Does anybody have any questions about the path?
I have a question. The river trail enhancement, there's been efforts to improve that entire section, right? What's the status of that? Bike repair stations, all kinds of stuff.
I know nothing.
Is that an Ocean Beach issue?
It's
a city issue.
Mission Bay.
It's OB Mission, so this is technically in the Mission Bay Parks Committee's district.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. But that's just from
we're asking for at this point is support of the entire board to go before the Mission Bay Parks people and make a request that they look into this and try to fund it. That's all we're requesting at this point.
On behalf of the planning
board.
We would just support that.
I just want to throw in, because this is the first thing I brought up when we started talking about capital improvement projects, and I wasn't aware that it was a Mission Bay thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm in extreme support. This path is horrendous, and it's a liability.
Yeah, totally.
But
running on that is like a sprained ankle waiting
to
happen.
We do need representation over there because they do have the money, and we need more. We need some of that money coming over to Ocean Beach, whether it's the pathway here or Robb Field or anywhere. I mean.
So it is. The meeting is the first Tuesday of the month, so it would have been yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's the day before these meetings. So it's easy to remember.
They did.
Yeah.
Where is it at?
It is at Santa Clara Rex.
Yeah. So a quick question / comment. I totally echo what Kevin's comment was, but I believe this board did see review a master plan that went from the mountains to the ocean that included, I mean, they had everything designed out, and I don't even remember which group it was. I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago we saw it in this room. I would recommend trying to not reinvent the wheel, and if they have something already in the works, to just try to propel whatever that plan is, whoever that group is, to
push
that.
Several.
Because there were, like, naturalization, natural interpretive signs, sitting areas, like, all kinds of cool stuff.
I think
yeah.
So I
do
have... It needs to be repaved.
Yeah.
Before it all washes away. We can't wait for the signs to be repaved.
There's craters in it.
Well, yeah. Craig did make a motion.
Yeah. Okay. I'll second.
Yeah. Second. Okay, Richard second. All those in favor of the
motion
to
liaise with
an official liaison.
Absolutely. From the transportation committee.
From the transportation committee, yeah. Awesome. All those opposed? All those abstaining? Frank, do you have one more comment?
Yeah, I want to remind everybody that Ocean Beach has a representative on this all-powerful committee.
It's
Gio. Mm-hmm. So give him, you know, stretch his ear out.
Yeah.
Get in his ear and tell him what you need.
We should bring him in.
And don't forget, it is a powerful committee. You know, they've endorsed, you know, the expansion of the
money
media and all that kind of stuff.
That makes power.
They're ones who came for the...
They control
the
pocket.
That's where
so funny.
Right?
That was his first position.
Yeah. Really? So I can... I'll get you Gio's contact information.
Great.
And I'm pretty sure I was talking his ear off about this James Christmas.
Yeah, and I can make the meeting. I just need to get it in my book.
Awesome. Yeah,
okay.
I'll add you then.
It's a really long
time. Okay, final presentation of the night. And this is a fun one because I think if we, so this is already in our bylaws, so I wanted to go over a few brief things about a consent agenda so that we can start implementing them. Save us maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes in our meeting moving forward. So this is already in our bylaws, we don't have any action. I just didn't want to throw a consent agenda at you guys without going over what it is. So a consent agenda would allow us to take action on multiple items at once. It would be at the top of the meeting, so it can save time and agenda space, things that, you know, I probably would have put on in the consent agenda today, the liaison thing, or the pathways, things that require limited discussion that would usually typically pass a unanimous consent. So the way you get on a consent agenda is it has to go through a committee first. So it either has to be in a transportation committee, initiated action item, a project review committee, initiated action item, or the public outreach. I would only consider it for the consent agenda if it passed through the committee unanimously. And since it's between passage in the committee and coming to present to the board, no significant changes have occurred. And then also just routine procedural actions. So when it comes up that we have to renew our PO box, pay our server fees, those are the types of things I'd also put on a consent agenda. All right, next. So just the other things to know, anyone from the board or the public, these are also in our bylaws, just by request. We don't even have to vote on it. You can request it to be moved to the regular agenda and off the consent item. So it's not, you know, end all be all, you don't get to discuss it. If there is something you really want to discuss, we can pull it off the consent item agenda. And all items on the consent agenda would be properly noticed and have all the documents up ahead of time. And then you can email me any questions you have, not opinions, not ways that you want to vote on it, any questions, and then I can respond back to the full board to answer those questions, just to kind of clarify and make sure that we're still getting all the comments in. So those are the other things to know. Anyone have any questions about a consent agenda? Any hesitation? Yes, Kevin.
I think I know this, but for everyone else's benefit, the key is these are not discussed at the meeting.
Correct.
You rarely vote on it, period.
Correct.
So you got to look at it
research.
In advance.
Yep.
And, you know, unless you want to be a jerk and take 10 minutes because you didn't do the documents, pull it off.
And this is, and that's actually what I like about it, is it requires people to do a little bit of research ahead of time. So
like the one project that came was
from
Rio
Terrace.
Yeah, the 2077, that might have been something that would be considered.
What's a 2077?
So
Cable Street.
So that was their example. They would still come here ready to present just in case.
Yeah.
And they would be totally cool with getting approved all the consent agenda, I assume, and getting out of here soon. So
that went through.
I think it's a great idea.
I would have still, like, so things that could have gone on the consent agenda this time, OB pathways, pedestrian improvements, the river bike path trail, and 2077 cable. The Orchard project would not have been considered because it did not pass out of project review committee unanimously, and also Bermuda Stairs had no action taken on it. So that would also be not on that agenda. So we were just getting backed up here. I have a lot of requests coming in, a lot of things coming up last minute, and so I just want to make sure that we're taking care of everything as it comes up, and we're on top and we're in front of things.
The only concern I have is for the committees that have very minimal members on it. Like, Jenna and I are the only people on this outreach committee, which means if you add a consent agenda item about an outreach thing, it's going to pass without anybody really giving a lot of feedback.
Pass.
Or not pass, right?
Well, I wouldn't automatically put things on there.
Okay.
Consent agenda, just because they had, like, I would also ask you, hey, would you want, do you think the board would want to discuss this? Or would you want to try and pass it through? It would be a lot of the chairs, but you know, ultimately it would fall to the chair making the agenda of what to put on the consent agenda.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like there's
the
some
minimum threshold that you have to meet to get considered for it.
Great.
I feel like sometimes it's worthwhile, even if we know it's going to pass unanimously, just to like give the presentation and talk it out and make sure everyone is aware, so that if they get asked questions.
Yeah, and so you will still have all the documents online, and you can again review them and then send any questions. Without opinions, without statements of how you are supporting the project, leave questions, and then I can respond back to those, CCing the whole board, so everyone knows and gets the answers to those questions too. Chris?
I was just going to throw it out there. I mean, I'm very familiar with the consent agenda. I think it's a good practice. To echo Jenna's point, I think some things like the river path example, I think that's something that we should have we would want to discuss. I mean, I understand any member can propose and pull out from the consent and do that, but that would be one area of hesitation. The second thing is, As I'm familiar with a consent agenda operating, it's usually routine items, like you said. So I just want to have some good clarity around the fact that only items that end up on the consent agenda have passed unanimously through the committee. Because that's kind of a big one where you're taking a project and saying, we're going to put that on the consent agenda. I think I have a little hesitation around that, but if there's clarity that those are only unanimous items, I could support it.
Only unanimous and only, like I said, only ones that haven't seen a significant change since the PRC. Like, I wouldn't, another perfect project example would have been the emergency permitting we did for the Narragansett stair repair. Like, that,
if
anyone's time. Like, that could have been on a consent agenda. But I see your point, and I definitely wouldn't want, I don't want anyone accusing us of pushing through. So, that is my information.
Thank you.
And maybe we'll have some stuff next month. I don't know. Maybe. I actually think our kilo box stuff is coming out. Thank you. So now I have chair announcements, correspondence, and liaison reports. Elections are next month. There's still, you still have time to get your signatures in if you want to be considered as a write-in candidate.
You got it?
So otherwise, we will posting the ballots.
Newman?
Yes.
Do you have signatures for
me? I do not.
Is the deadline?
May I have an extension from you?
When is
the
deadline?
No, you can still run. It's just you won't be put on the ballot. So you'll have to be a
write-in.
A write-in.
Because tonight was
the deadline. So I have to give her all of the names so she can publish who's running for what.
True.
So you can still be on the ballot.
You can still be on
the ballot. But you want a write-in candidate last.
Well, I'm usually a writer.
So all things being said, I have signatures from Andrea, Tracy, Jane, Anthony, Virginia. I needed one from Kevin, but you got it. So are you going for District 6 or the at-large?
I'll do 6.
Okay. And then Newman for District 5. I don't have anything
for you.
Okay, so that means I have openings in District 2, District 1, District 7, and I have an at-large. Actually, I think I have...
And Jenna's in the other
I'm in an at-large.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Jenna's odd at-large. She got elected last year.
No, wait. I'm the odd at large, sorry. So odd.
We have a vacancy in seven, a vacancy in two, and a vacancy in one.
Where am I at? Five. Am I still just writing in five?
You're going to be a writing in five, if that's how you like it. Or you can run for the at-large.
No, I live in five.
Well, okay. That's
I don't like change.
You can make that decision.
Or getting signatures.
Next month, you can make that decision.
Okay.
You don't have to make that. No.
I'm trying to arrange a presentation from SDG&E and then also another energy company because the franchise agreement is coming up, has to be renewed this year. So it's an interesting presentation we saw at CPC, and I think it's very informative. I learned a lot. And do you have any other announcements? Does the election committee have further announcements?
No, I just wanted to make it clear that we have the openings. I think Frank got those down pretty clear.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I wanted to thank Frank for the nice write-up that he did in the OB rag with a little historical part of it, too. That was really nice, Frank. Thank you.
Don't give me a microphone. You know I'll take it off. For example, this is the wrong date. It was not established in 77. It was established in 76. How do I know? Because I was there.
That's Lori Zapp's fault.
That, but
we can blame Lori Zapp's fault.
Lori.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
Laura.
Tracy. So, Treasury report?
Treasury report. There is currently $1,173.82.
Thank you.
Even after the parade.
Thank you.
Even after the parade.
So,
we came in on time and way below budget. Thank you to Kevin Hastings for his connections with the flatbed trailers and stuff like that.
Not counting all the pizza we ate, right?
Yeah, you didn't put in your receipt for that, so
that's... Hey, Kevin bought it. Did you vendor buy
it? I thought you bought it.
I can't.
Well, somebody bought it and didn't put in the receipt, so that's... So, as a secretary, I don't have anything, but for the Culture for Arts and... or Commission for Arts and Culture. So, I put a couple of flyers out. The Commission for Arts and Culture, or... San Diego Commission for Arts and Culture, they are still, even though the deadline has passed, they are still looking for advisory panelists. They are in particular need of more professionals from the nonprofit arts field who are not conflicted out, which means you're not working for a museum or some kind of arts industry. Ideally from universities or organizations from outside of San Diego, finance professionals, nonprofit experts, and experts in special events, festivals, or et cetera. And at the meeting, they also said that they're really looking for people who have choral or choir music kinds of background because they don't have a lot of people evaluating these proposals or these grants. So what they're looking for, the advisory panelists are the ones that actually read the grants and they rate the grants and then the grants are rated and then they are proposed to the commissioners and the commissioners either bless them or not bless them, but hopefully we're blessing them because we also are blessing our advisory panelists. So if we trust our advisory panelists to make appropriate recommendations, then we're going to bless what recommendations they make. So that's what we're looking for right now is the advisory panelists to read all through the grants and decide based on whatever criteria whether people are going to get money or not. And it could be a lot of money. So anyways, there's flyers up there. If you guys have any questions, let me know. And I can direct you to the person who can send you the initial questionnaire.
Just to echo that really quickly, sorry, I have a member of my team who's taking part in that, and it's been a highly scrutinized process over the last 3-4 years, just in terms of how the city doles out this money to large organizations and small organizations, but it's vastly improved, and I think this year is another example of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know people who are in these walks of life, it's a great opportunity to get involved in that.
And they're really, really looking for diversity, too. I mean, we don't have a lot of diversity, and it was a comment that was made at the meeting last weekend that they said, you know, it'd be really, it's kind of surprising to know that these arts industries are so male, white male run. You know, you'd think that it would be women and, you know, other ethnicities, and you know, but it's not. It's still predominantly white male, so they're definitely looking for more diversity as well.
Mm.
So,
Jay,�
you have anything from the Historical Society?
Yes, I do. And our next meeting, it's February 20th, and we'll be sharing a 1928 to 1938 silent movie. Mm-hmm. And it has clips of Sunset Cliffs and OB and Point Loma. And I have some brochure or postcards if anybody wants one.
Thank you. Regina, do we have anything from the Forestry Board?
Well, I think there's still a comment. There's a plan to dismantle the board and combine it with two other boards, Wetlands and the Sunset Cliffs. Something else that's vaguely related.
Okay.
And I think it's really misguided. We had a workshop. Jen Campbell's office sponsored a workshop where people could provide input on that plan.
You don't remember what the other one was?
They have a list of 15 criteria for the 15 members of the board, and none of them would represent trees in any way.
Mm-hmm. And where would we make comments? Just to Jen's office?
That would be good.
Okay.
Yeah, they have the environmental committee for the city, so that would
what
be
project is that? They're trying to combine the forestry board with the wetland board and then a third environmental board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have anything for NACAC?
Yeah, the Airport Noise Committee meets next, February 19th. On their website, they have all these metrics and wonderful automated processes where you can go and track flights, look at noise contours, look at where noise actually is happening in real time or historically. And with the weather-related incidents we've had lately, there's been a lot of squawk in the community about aircraft diverting for safety reasons, but it's really causing people problems. So I encourage everybody to go to meetings, check out the noise statistics, and look at the tracking online. If you have any questions about whether or not an aircraft is vibrating for commercial reasons or for actual safety, and then you can put your noise complaints on there.
And then Mandy, I think you had a PCPB.
Yeah. The chair of the Peninsula Community Planning Board and the vice chair resigned this last month. They're going to complete their term to the end of March. But we are also having our elections. So if you have any friends or people that live in the Peninsula Community Planning Board area, let them know that we'll be conducting our elections in March. There are 7 seats currently available.
Thank you. Okay, any last thing, Kevin? You have a vice chair report?
The project review committee is meeting in 2 weeks. The Peninsula Board I attended in Tracy's place, they voted against the North Chapel rehab project converting to commercial rental space. And then also the Formosa open space / potential affordable housing development. There doesn't seem to be much interest, so the city has delayed that entire RFP process, giving more time to try to recruit proposals for that. They voted to recommend allocating $650,000 for completion of the salt pool stair design and construction, redesign and reconstruction. I sent info to Elizabeth Nichols and some of these other guys on that other stair project, showing them that that entire thing is a void underneath.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Is that our salt pole?
Yes. Yes.
It's the one that closes access to the tide pool.
Yeah, right.
It's close to
the peninsula?
I'm also allocated $200,000 to these ones.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Just quickly, if you're interested in attending the outreach subcommittee, which I know some of you guys don't really care about, but anyways, we've actually postponed it. It was supposed to happen next week, but we've postponed it to accommodate some scheduling issues. So we postponed it. I posted it online. The new time and date is online already.
Awesome. Thank you, Tracy.
Nobody cares about outreach. They just want to...